possibility means you have a chance.
Passion opens the door to all possibilities.
When I feel like anything's possible, I feel kind of giddy.
I want to be an astronaut,
an artist,
an actress.
To visit another country.
All I need is a backpack and a pair of shoes and I'll find a way.
That I'm able to do anything I set my mind to.
I've never felt like more things are possible than right now.
In the right shoes, anything's possible.
DSW, countless shoes at brag-worthy prices. Imagine the possibilities.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
We had constructive, specific meeting, and I'm very thankful to all the leaders who are here, and you help a lot, and so we are happy that we have such big unity today.
I'm Lauren Berry, and this is On Deadline, a deep dive into a topic from Odyssey's newsrooms across the country. Today, we're talking about Afterglow, world leader style. We all remember when Ukrainian leader Volodymyr Zelensky's choice of attire and a verbal lashing delivered to him by Vice President J.D. Vance became front-page news. But this week, when Zelensky sat down with President Donald Trump, that was in the rearview mirror. Zelensky and Trump were all smiles this time, after they gathered following Trump's meeting with Russian leader Vladimir Putin for peace talks. This genial atmosphere had many outlets reporting that Zelensky had learned the ropes of working with Trump. And those ropes included what he wore and the number of times he offered thanks. Because of that, the meeting between President Trump, Ukrainian President Zelensky, and other European leaders at the Oval Office this week had a different tone compared to their previous meeting in February.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. I think you'll see that President Putin really would like to do something else. I think when we set that up, when we do, I think it's going to be when, not if. I think you're going to see some very really positive moves. I know there's over 1,000 prisoners, and I know they're going to release them. Maybe they're going to release them very soon, like immediately, which I think is great. But we will, we're going to set that up today after this meeting. So very good and great remarks. I appreciate it.
Have said I'm willing to participate in the security guarantees is a big step. It's really a breakthrough, and it makes all the difference. So also thank you for that.
Well, NATO also has agreed from 2% to 5%, which is something that is a massive amount of money. And it's 2% that wasn't always paid to 5% that is paid. That's a big difference. And so we appreciate that. That was a great move.
But the outcome, that's still a mystery. While there were signs that progress was made during this meeting, lasting peace for Ukraine is still far away. Trump admitted that the ongoing conflict is a, quote, tough one to solve, and conceded that it was possible the Russian president is not actually interested in ending hostilities. We're going to find out about Putin in the next couple of weeks, Trump said on Tuesday. It's possible that he doesn't want to make a deal. Beth Noble, former CBS News Moscow bureau chief and journalism professor at Fordham University, joined KCBS Radio in the Bay Area to break this all down for us.
So it was certainly a different vibe in that meeting yesterday.
Oh, yeah. I mean, back in February when President Zelensky came to the White House to meet President Trump, it was a train wreck. This time he learned from his mistakes. He showed up in a jacket. as opposed to his camouflage. He thanked President Trump profusely over and over for trying to bring a peace deal to Ukraine. And this time, President Zelensky brought his posse. He came with five European leaders and the heads of NATO and the European Commission. Some of them dropped out of their own vacations and rushed to Washington for this meeting. And it seems like, from all indications, they got a lot done, although, boy, a peace is still pretty far away and a lot has to happen for the world to get there.
Talk about the positional change from President Trump, who said that initially he could get this done in a day, and now saying that, well, really, it's up to the two leaders of those countries and, the ball is in their court.
Yeah, and that's right. I mean, this is Vladimir Putin's war. This war never, ever had to happen. It's all Vladimir Putin's fault. It's all his aggression. And he's got to end it. He's got to find terms that he can accept. And certainly the Ukrainians have to have a seat at the table because it's their country. It's their future. And so there were some worries last week that when President Trump sat down in Alaska with President Putin, that there might be some attempts to cut Ukraine out of the peace process. Well, after these meetings yesterday in Washington, it's clear that Ukraine and Europe are going to be involved in trying to come up with some kind of lasting peace in Ukraine, or at this point, any peace in Ukraine.
I think a lot of people might have been surprised that the president didn't rule out the possibility of U.S. Soldiers' boots on the ground as a security force. Do you see any way that could happen?
Yeah, well, Eric, that's a really big change over the last couple of days. Previously, President Trump had been looking to Europe to be the ones to figure out how to give Ukraine the security guarantees that it wants. And, Ukraine was attacked by Russia twice in a little over 12 years. And you could see that they're really worried that if there's a peace deal now, that they not be attacked by Russia again a year or 2 years or 3 years down the road. And so somebody's got to make sure that Vladimir Putin and Russia doesn't come back into Ukraine again. And the U.S. had been resisting having a role in it, and now they're saying that they might take a role. So apparently some specialists from Europe, Ukraine, and the U.S. are going to start sitting down soon to try to hammer out what it might look like. Is there going to be some kind of international force on the ground in Ukraine? And if there is President Putin going to accept it?
That's what I was going to ask you. How likely is it that President Putin would agree to something like that, having U.S. Boots on the ground?
Well, who knows? We don't know exactly what Presidents Putin and Trump talked about when they met in Alaska last week. We don't know how much this came up. Certainly, there have been signs just in the last day from the Russian Foreign Ministry that they do not want NATO troops on the ground in Ukraine. I mean, one of the reasons this whole war happened is because Vladimir Putin doesn't want NATO to expand anymore into Ukraine and be, right on his southern flank. So this is going to be a really, really complicated issue. And it's good that there are going to be some specialists sitting down to try to hammer out the details, because the details here are going to matter a lot.
One final thing. In the previous meeting you alluded to, it seemed like Vice President J.D. Vance was the pit bull in the room. Yesterday, silence.
Yeah, he even smiled at President Zelensky. I don't know if Saturday Night Live isn't back on the air yet, but, if they were, they had a field day after that February meeting. They wouldn't have a lot to parody this week. And, maybe it's good for world peace that the meetings are going better now, that the European and the Ukrainian leaders have learned how to work with President Trump, because President Trump is certainly trying to play a role here in bringing peace to Ukraine. And the Russians attacked them again overnight with missiles and drones. It's a terrible situation. And I think a lot of people want it to end. We just don't really know if Vladimir Putin is one of them, because he's getting a lot of good things in his own country from making people rally around the flag during this war.
Beth, thank you so much, as always, for joining us.
Thank you, Eric.
That's Beth Noble, former CBS News Moscow Bureau Chief and Journalism Professor at Fordham University.
There are still many open questions about what a potential security force in Ukraine would look like, including whether it would involve U.S. support through means like aircraft, command and control, or intelligence sharing. There also appears to be some confusion or contradiction in President Trump's positions, as he initially called for a ceasefire, but then said a ceasefire wasn't necessary. Here's KCBS with more.
Possibility means you have a chance.
Passion opens the door to all possibilities.
When I feel like anything's possible, I feel kind of giddy.
I want to be an astronaut,
an artist,
an actress,
to visit another country.
All I need is a backpack and a pair of shoes, and I'll find a way.
That I'm able to do anything I set my mind to.
I've never felt like more things are possible than right now.
In the right shoes, anything's possible.
DSW, countless shoes at bragworthy prices. Imagine the possibilities.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
President Trump this morning has confirmed that U.S. troops will not be part of a security force on the ground in Ukraine after hostilities ceased there. Yesterday, he didn't rule it out. So let's take a deeper dive into it. We're joined live on the KCBS Ring Central Newsline by Jeff McCausland, CBS News military analyst. And Jeff, thanks for joining us. It seemed kind of strange that the president wouldn't say whether or not yesterday that whether there would be U.S. boots on the ground there.
Yeah, it did seem a bit strange, and I was surprised that he seemed least inclined to consider it, Eric. But now I think he has clarified it. There would be no U.S. troops on the ground. But again, our European allies are going to want, I think, some U.S. involvement. The British have always talked about that they would provide forces, for example, want an American backstop. But what might that American backstop be? Could be aircraft, could be command and control, could be logistics. Certainly it'll be continued providing of intelligence on Russian forces as part of that overall force. And then, of course, the purpose of the force is also of concern. Is that a force that's going to be physically of a size where it could deter a Russian aggression? Or is it a peacekeeping force that's sort of there as a tripwire that would bring in those other countries should Russia violate the terms of any particular agreement? So there's a lot to do in terms of clarifying what these security guarantees might look like. Obviously, critical for Ukraine, if they're going to give up territory, how do they know that the Russians will stand by this agreement since the Russians have violated several over the last 20 years or more? And furthermore, the Ukrainians were there, I think, yesterday because they support Ukrainian security. This, for them, is also European security. And how can we be assured, absent a security force of some means, that Russia would not continue its aggression beyond Ukraine, perhaps threatening a NATO partner?
Yeah, I can't imagine, though, that President Putin would want any NATO troops on the ground between him and Ukraine.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And that's why I think part of our problem is we talk about meetings with Putin and Zelensky and trilateral meetings and security guarantees. We need to get a greater clarity on the Russian position. You know, there seems to be some dispute now on whether or not Mr. Putin would accept, as you suggest, any NATO troops from any partner being present on Ukrainian soil, even if they were there not under a NATO flag, because obviously if it was under a NATO flag, you could say it was tacit membership for Ukraine into NATO, something the Russians have been totally opposed to. And furthermore, there are a number of things that Putin has alluded to and talked about that still have to be clarified as well. One is, what's his position on Ukrainian forces? His steadfast position since the onset of these hostilities is the conclusion would include such things as not only not joining NATO, that Ukraine would reduce its military forces to less than 85,000, would end all military aid to Ukraine, and would eliminate the current government and bring in a new government. So as we talk about so-called land swaps and we talk about security guarantees, we need to get a clear bits of clarity on exactly what all this Russian position is if we're going to negotiate, I think, in good faith.
And we have watched the goalposts move in regards to that over the past 3 years.
We certainly have. Though I have to say the Russians have been pretty consistent about demanding this territory that they now occupy and more, and those things I just mentioned in terms of the ending of the Zelensky government and no admission to NATO. And they've continually talked about that. Well, we've suggested, well, they might compromise. I've seen no reason to believe the Russians are willing to compromise on any of those things. I mean, witness his final remark, he Putin in Alaska. And he began his remarks by saying the root causes of this war have got to be addressed before we get a settlement. Well, for him, that's the root causes of the war and the rolling back of NATO. What he wants to do is he really wants to move things back to where it was prior to the end of the Cold War, where he thinks Russia ended up losing in a bad position. He wants that reasserting of Russian sovereignty, power, and control on the European landmass and a redo of European security architecture.
So there's one question that a lot of pundits have asked, and it's this. Who really won that much ballyhooed Alaskan summit between Trump and Putin? Note that Putin is a former KGB officer who came up on the mean streets of the former Soviet Union. So he's no slouch when it comes to getting tough. Trump, on the other hand, prides himself on negotiating tactics and bargaining skills honed during decades at the helm of a billion-dollar development business. And there are concerns that President Trump may be putting more pressure on President Zelensky to make concessions rather than holding Russia accountable. This raises concerns about the strength of the U.S. support for Ukraine. Colonel Jeff McCausland, CBS military analyst, discussed it on the Newell Norman Show.
Colonel, very little information has leaked out other than the Russians want the Donbass, which you said that's what they wanted, and the U.S. may be willing to provide security guarantees. We're not sure what that means. I thought Ukraine had one already prior to the invasion in 2014. So where are we? And now today, European leaders visiting with Zelensky and the president in D.C. Your thoughts?
Well, where we are is, of course, coming out of this Alaskan summit. And, of course, and what we saw in Alaska, I thought, was a major pivot by President Trump from what his going-in position was to what his coming-out position was. If one said who was successful at that particular summit, I'd say you'd have to say Mr. Putin was, and that's judging by the goals that both went in for. Trump, at the onset, said he was going to insist on an immediate ceasefire and then negotiations on a final settlement, and if the Russians didn't agree with that, there would be severe consequences, and he talked about increased tariffs and sanctions on the Russians. He talked about secondary sanctions on countries like India and China that would buy an awful lot of oil and underwrite the cost of the war in Ukraine. Well, none of that happened, and he came out of it more aligned with Mr. Putin in saying, well, I've decided what we need to do is go to an immediate final settlement, which the Russians have always talked about in the past. And coming out of the meeting, of course, in the aftermath, there was no press conference, and you're right, it was pretty opaque at the end. But Mr. Putin gave, I thought, a pretty important speech in which he talked about what he talked about to go in with, that the root causes have to be addressed. That's what the Russians have said since this war began. For them, the root causes really are NATO has to do a rollback. Ukraine can't join NATO. The Ukrainians have to give up these four provinces plus Ukraine. Ukrainian military has to be reduced to 85,000, a new government in Ukraine, and Ukraine has to agree that Russian is the official language of Ukraine. It's kind of a surrender. But in essence, they go away with that still pretty much intact. So I think they probably were drinking a lot of vodka on the way back to Moscow.
So there's been a lot of chatter about this security guarantee being something very similar to the Article 5 guarantee if you're a participating NATO member. If you would, remind the audience of this alleged guarantee that we had prior to the invasion in 2014 of Crimea. I thought there was one that everyone had agreed to. didn't seem to come to the forefront.
Well, that's exactly right. But and what this goes back to, of course, is the NATO guarantee, Article 5, applies to NATO members, and Ukraine is not a NATO member. And that's very true. But there have been several guarantees by the Russians. Let's begin at the beginning. In 1991, when all the republics of the Soviet Union would meet in Tashkent, they would sign an agreement whereby they would become independent and they would recognize each other's borders. And the Russian Federation recognized the border of Ukraine in 1991, which included Crimea as part of Ukraine. Then in 1991 also, the Ukrainians would announce the transfer of nuclear weapons that were on the soil of Ukraine to the Russian Federation. And in return, this is called the Budapest Memorandum. In return, the United States, Russian Federation, and Great Britain guaranteed the sovereignty of Ukraine. Well, in 2014, when the Russians would invade Crimea, that didn't mean a great deal. But we have to put that, I think, a little bit in a context. And don't forget, Ukraine was in the midst of a revolution and near civil war at that time. The leader of Ukraine, who was in many ways a Russian puppet, had opposed efforts to move Ukraine closer to the European Union. That had resulted in mass social unrest in Kyiv. He fled the country, and amidst all that unrest, the Russians would, in fact, invade and occupy Crimea with no particular casualties, and they would also begin a civil war in the Donbas region, and basically that would be frozen in another agreement called the Minsk Accords in 2014, which was supposed to lead to negotiation on a final settlement. And, of course, once again in 2022, that was violated with the former. So there have been several in the past. The security guarantee has always been fundamental to the Ukrainians because of that history. Their belief is us transferring territory to the Russians doesn't mean much. It's a temporary solution. We've seen this movie before, and that would just set the stage for them to invade again. And furthermore, if they gave up the territory the Russians demand that they still occupy, they would compromise what is their primary defensive belt and put them in a militarily very inferior position to defend themselves. So that's why they want some kind of a security guarantee. Well, joining NATO would be a security guarantee, but we've taken that off the table. So it seems to be now being discussed as some kind of a security guarantee of the so-called coalition of the willing. That would include, based on their presence today at least, I would think their principal European allies, Brits, Germans, French, Italians. But the real question is, what would be the participation of the United States? Mr. Trump has had, you know, some rather vague comments about accepting some kind of security guarantee, but no idea what that means for the United States. Does that mean American soldiers in Ukraine? Does that mean the United States provides air cover, logistics, command and control? The real, you know, details are not unimportant in this particular regard. So what's odd, Newell, in a way, is we're very clear about what Vladimir Putin wants. He's made that clear. He reiterated that in Alaska. What we're unclear about is what Donald Trump wants and what Donald Trump's willing to accept.
Is there the possibility of some type of military base of the coalition of the willing being inside the territorial boundaries of Ukraine?
It's certainly possible.
That would be the most overt security guarantee one could offer, right?
Yeah, it's possible. I mean, you could end up in a ceasefire, or rather, and here the terms are not unimportant, an armistice. You know, we're in an armistice in Korea that has lasted now for some 70 years plus. U.S. forces have been in Korea to enforce that armistice for 70 plus years. So could you imagine something like that on the border to be determined between Ukraine and Russia? Perhaps. That would be, I think, something that would be of interest to the Ukrainians because, again, based on the history I described, they're obviously skeptical about, you know, things that are said that are not backed up by physical forces on the ground that underscore the deterrence value of the security guarantees to prevent or deter the Russians from future aggression.
Dean Phillips, a former congressman, joined Chad Hartman at WCCO Radio in Minneapolis for further analysis of what happened and what's next.
President Zelensky, they met the media. For about 30 minutes, it was typical Trump. It was on the matter hand, but it was also on mail-in ballots, on election 2020, on D.C. It was all over the place, but this is all tied to the war between Russia and Ukraine, obviously all tied to one country invaded the other, one country led by a KGB thug. This, again, is the first time Trump and Zelensky have been in the Oval Office together since months ago when it was a warring situation, ugly situation between the two. A lot of lecturing from Team Trump towards Zelensky. This is in light of the president meeting Vladimir Putin. A lead up to that where the president repeatedly said if there was not immediate ceasefire, that first of all, he would know within a couple of minutes if they were going to have success. And if not, there would be severe consequences. There have been no severe consequences. Russia continues to fire weapons, and they've killed at least double figures in the last 24 hours in Ukraine. So now you have this meeting, prominent European leaders also in D.C. So to a former congressman who has observed this and still cares for this country, do you believe, if necessary, that President Trump will stand up to Vladimir Putin, and if severe consequences are necessary, will he apply those to Russia? Because to me, as an observer, I haven't seen it once, and I think it's highly, highly unlikely again.
Mm-hmm. Well, Chad, I you know, that's the question on everybody's mind. I think it's fair to say that any world leader, government official that has dealt with Vladimir Putin over the years would say the same thing. You know, he's not an honest broker. He's a thug. His worldview is antithetical to most of the West. He feels that the end of the USSR, the Soviet Union, was a historic tragedy for the Russian nation, and I think still regrets the fact that one of the former czars sold Alaska to the United States for $7 million. These are all truths. With all that said, you know, I don't think we can discount President Trump's passion for peace. He made a promise to his base. He made a promise to this country and the world that he would affect it. The one thing I celebrate, and it's, I know I'm an outlier amongst Democrats, is face-to-face meetings are never bad, if you ask me. America does not get to choose the leaders of other countries. We don't get to choose the system of governance. And if we believe that simply ignorance can be bliss when it comes to world peace, I think we're on the wrong side of history. So I do believe these meetings are important. I do believe that we have to better understand the fact that for Russia, having NATO at its doorstep is a real threat. And not unlike if Russia had a security compact with Canada or Mexico. And rest assured to everybody listening, if that was the case, how do you think the United States of America would handle Russia at its doorstep? We remember the Bay of Pigs and so forth. So with all that said, we're not dealing with an honest broker. I do think to end this conflict, it will take some land swap. And the fact that Putin has signaled that he would be willing to accept a security arrangement, a distinct security arrangement between the United States and Ukraine, is a pretty massive concession for a country and leader that have heretofore resisted even taking that important step. So conversation is good. Russia is suffering. Their erosion of relationship with China is real. And I do think Putin, while he looked pretty darn good the other day on the American stage, is in a position where he also wants peace. So this is going to be a tough pill, though, for Zelensky to swallow because he's been at this for years. He can't see the forest for the trees. And it's going to be sad and challenging for Ukraine to cede land. Last comment on this, Chad, is that this all really started, sadly, when Russia invaded and took Crimea during the Obama administration.
Yep.
America had an opportunity at that very time. At that very time to stand up, and we didn't. And as a result, we gave Vladimir Putin essentially free rein to continue this path. And I do think Donald Trump ultimately will stop it. I just hope it's under terms that are both reasonable, principled, and maintain the security of both Europe and the United States.
Okay, I'm glad you brought that up, and I want to echo what you're saying. I believe Donald Trump getting involved at a much more serious level compared to Joe Biden, I believe he deserves praise without a doubt,
yep.
Right? Whether it's for personal reasons, global reasons, decency reasons, whatever, I give him credit For the Trump folks who heard that last part and are saying, that's it. What can the Obama folks say about that particular time if a lot of us raise this idea of what does Putin potentially have on Trump? What happened in the back of the limousine? Why the bizarre comments in Helsinki? Here's Barack Obama in 2014 off his second election, a fairly popular man. And this takes place and there's outrage, there's condemnation. But the action that a lot of people are calling for now who are Democrats about Trump and greater sanctions, what really changed at that particular time when their guy was living, sleeping, and working at the White House?
That's a profound question. And by the way, Democrats are in an interesting position now as a party that, of course, is with the Republicans, anti-war, pro-sanction. Sanctions, by the way, Chad, have not worked. That's why we're approaching India right now. They're buying all the Russian oil that's financing this this madness. As for these relationships, only Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin know what they have on one another. Many of us suspected in Congress that some financial arrangement may have been offered to Donald Trump should he satisfy Putin's terms. And God knows, billions of dollars to Vladimir Putin are pennies in most people's couches. And I think there's a real chance that there is some arrangement. And that is profoundly frightening and despicable if it's the case. But the proof will be in the pudding, Chad. At the end of the day, if the bloodshed ends and there are security guarantees for Ukraine, for Europe, and frankly for Russia, the outcome will be promising. And I'll just close with the fact that none other than Hillary Clinton, I think a couple days ago, said that she would personally nominate Donald Trump for the Nobel Prize if he could secure a ceasefire and peace. So with that said, I think that's all listeners need to know. He's got a chance, and I hope he seizes the moment.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of On Deadline, written and produced by Christy Strouser and by me, Lauren Berry. You can listen to On Deadline through the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Escape the heat to True North convenience stores and get any size True Oasis fountain drink for 89 cents with True Rewards. Cool that thirst with any of your favorite Pepsi fountain drinks for 89 cents. As a free True Rewards member, pick the perfect size for you. No matter if you're craving a big drink or a small sip, it's just 89 cents. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
No matter why you give, your donations can do so much more with a donor-advised fund from DAFGiving 360. You can get a tax deduction upon funding an account, and your assets can potentially grow tax-free as you recommend when and where to give. It's a tax-smart way to maximize your charitable giving from a fund with over 25 years of expertise bringing donors, financial advisors, and charities together. Make a greater impact with DAFGiving 360. Learn more at DAFGiving360.org.
When New Yorkers buy a place with Street Easy, they have the local expertise they need to stay in the city. When they buy outside the city, they have regrets.
The only way to fix this place would be to move it back to Brooklyn.
When it's time to buy, let Street Easy connect you with the agent you need to never leave. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. Street Easy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.